out of the three of us, as a 6 foot man, I am the short king. One thing that's always been interesting is you guys are very close in height. So I've often heard the question asked, which one of you is taller?
The surprising answer, which is...
Hi, we're Vampire Weekend.
And this is Vampire Campfire.
I'm Bayo.
I'm Ezra.
And I'm CT.
We were just trying to record a promo for Radio One Big Weekend,
which we're very excited to go to.
I really thought we killed it. In my mind, we went all together. It was a 3-2-1. Hi, we're Vampire Weekend. And we can't wait to come to Radio One Big Weekend. And then Bayo informed me, I forgot to say wait too. So I said, and we can't come to Radio One Big Weekend. And then, you know, that created a vicious cycle of giggling. Because just the idea of very cheerfully recording a promo to tell Radio One Big Weekend that you
can't
come.
You're not playing a show.
Hi, we're Vampire Weekend.
And we can't come to Radio One Big Weekend.
Saluting, baby.
I was just there.
Up for real. Up the Hatters.
Well, that was a sad one because he said, we can't come to Radio One.
He said, we can't?
He said, we can't.
It was done so smoothly, but the message was unhinged, making an entire video to announce that you are not performing a concert.
So now I'm just like picturing, you know, just like various boy bands just doing like, and we can't come to Dallas next week.
One other recent highlight of this press tour we've been on, and I should say Only God Was Above Us, out on Friday.
Release week, boys.
It's release, release week. It feels good. We did a takeover of Sirius XMU, and they asked a question of Ezra, and Ezra was kind of pausing and really thinking about what he wanted to answer when all of a sudden his hand started moving up to his mouth against his will, and it was because CT was moving his elbow up to his face.
You know, Ezra's getting ready to drop some fire, drop some heat, as per usual, but he was sort of, if I can illustrate in real time, his mic was down here. Fire answer. Whatever it is, the mic's not going to get it. So I was trying to be not smooth, but subtly trying to like, nudge his elbow.
Hey, bro, don't forget to have your mic up.
Don't forget
by your
to get mic'd up. Essentially,
whereas in my mind, I was kind of like, I wanted to ask them a question.
You're asking a clarifying question before you started.
What were you thinking in that moment when your hand was moving against your will?
You're just subtly picking up my elbow. I was just confused. Anybody who does press or has to like repeat things, and you're prone to some type of downward spiral of laughing. And what came to mind is promoting Contra, doing like dozens of interviews. A well-meaning, nice guy was interviewing us. He just very straightforwardly asked a question about the song Horchacha. And it was just something about hearing him say Horchacha at that time of day. That was a tough one. All right, release week.
How you feeling for this week?
Like anybody, I can have moments of getting like a little swept up and like, oh, how's the album doing? How's the tour doing? All that stuff. But I really did feel like when this album was done, I did have a type of confidence. And there's like the confidence of youth just being like, yeah, this is like really, really cool. I can't wait for it to be out there. And then there's like also the confidence of being older, which is kind of like, I know this record rules.
Yeah.
Come what may. In many ways, it's our best. Each album is our best in different ways, and people are going to have their moments with them, and it's going to hit them at different moments in their life. So I'm not too hung up on like what is the best, but I just had like this confidence, like this is absolutely the perfect fifth Vampire Weekend album. It feels like the next chapter.
You going to do anything fun on Friday?
I'm still figuring out exactly where I'm going to be on Friday.
Cause we got the show in Austin
Monday.
On Monday.
Yeah.
So by then, maybe I'll be in Marfa. Wait, isn't there someone, is there a Fort Collins? Didn't we used to stop in a fort in West Texas on the road?
Between Austin and El Paso.
Fort Collins is Colorado or something?
Yes, yeah. It's Fort.
And Fort Myers is Florida?
Something. We had a great Mexican meal there.
We'll be circling Austin. Hopefully we'll each be in a different part of Texas just selling records.
Canvassing.
Okay.
Canvassing. Yeah, yeah. It's a funny thing with albums because of course I understand. We got to get out there. You got to do some press. The lead up to the album is like in some ways the most important part. But deep down, I also just know I'm always the most excited for people to spend time with the record. I'm just excited that people finally have the whole album. They can spend time with it. We've built a catalog that people can kind of like discover and find ways in. Father the Bride went gold. It was a long, long, hard road. It means that with time, the record meant something to people. That's the most you can hope for. It's just that the music has some type of durability. So yeah, I'm excited that the album release is such like a kickoff. In the one way, it's the culmination of the rollout. But another way, but in the most important way, it's a kickoff to hopefully a record with it. I know for a fact we'll be playing songs from this record for many years to come.
The record's coming out in 2 days, first record in 5 years. This is the third episode of Vampire Campfire.
It's important we finally...
Well, you've said you wanted to discuss the topic of height.
Yes, I have. There's certain like old, I don't want to say jokes, old conversations that come up over and over again, when you're the same
over
group
a decade,
of people over,
yeah, absolutely.
Over the years. There was a time when if you Googled me, it said that I was like 5'9 or something. Every height is beautiful. I know short guys, some of the coolest guys I know. And I've even met some tall guys.
Lame.
They're total ding-dongs. Whatever height you are is great, but it just always struck me as so weird. I was like, who just went out of their way to say my incorrect height? I've always believed that I was 6 feet. That's what they always told me at the doctor. Once I even looked at my chart at the doctor and they wrote that I was 6'1". The topic of height, some people are obsessed with it. You always hear people talking about in the dating apps.
Yes, yeah, I've
heard
that.
Some people like set the height thing at this like insane number and they're missing out on so many great people.
Short kings, yep.
Right, even the phrase short kings.
Of course.
But the funny thing is, in this band, I am a short king. Out of the three of us, as a 6 foot man, I am the short king of the band. And one thing that's always been interesting is you guys are very close in height. So I've often heard the question asked, which one of you is taller?
The surprising answer, which is Bayo is taller.
I am taller.
I read
yes.
taller.
But you read taller.
But you are actually taller.
Oh, because yes. sometimes you guys say, who do you think is taller?
Yeah, exactly. We'll ask.
We turn it back on them.
Almost everybody guesses that CT is taller than me.
So, I have an inner tallness.
Because I don't carry myself that tall. If somebody's seen pictures of me or been to a show and then they came up to me, they're like, oh, I didn't realize you were that tall. Actors, when you meet them in person, they're shorter than you imagine because you see them on big screens and stuff like that. And musicians, when you see them on big stages from far away, they tend to be bigger than you imagine. But my theory, I have an extremely enormous head. Like, clearly, if you can't fathom a head this big, you would think I'm shorter. They'll see the Jumbotron at the show. They'll say, okay, he's got to be like 5'11". A head like that can't be on a 6'2"
right,
frame based on how big that head is.
Just generally speaking, if you say to somebody, close your eyes, picture a guy with a really big head. They're like, all right, you got him?
Yeah.
You got him in your mind's eye? How tall is he? And they're going to be like 5'4".
Yeah, 5'4". Well, exactly.
I think it's more of a perception. Height is in the eyes of the beholder or something here. It's not really like what I do so much as the way people think I'm taller than Bayo for whatever reason.
How tall are you guys?
I call myself 6'2".
I'd like to create a chart just for my own edification about guys who are taller than me. Dave Maklovich, Dave One from Chromeo, he told me he was 6'5". And I always think of him as being like a tall, skinny guy, but I was like, 6'5"? I was interested in how tall the character Reacher was. There's a big hit show on Amazon called Reacher. It's based on a series of novels. There was a movie based on the Reacher novels back in the day. It's a great movie. Werner Herzog is the bad guy, and Tom Cruise is the good guy, Reacher. And Tom Cruise famously is short king. It was a great movie, but I had no idea that for like the...
I think there was controversy on the casting.
There was a lot of controversy in the Reacher Hive.
Yes.
When I heard about that, I'm thinking like, who cares? And that's how I felt until I saw the TV show Reacher, and I realized every other moment is this guy being like, yeah, I'm kind of big. You know, like, just like, or somebody be like, whoa, you're big. And he's like, yeah, I'm a big guy, and I'm about to, like, whoop your ass. And then I realized, like, okay, it's very ingrained into the character. So the character Reacher is 6'5". And then the actor who plays Reacher is not actually 6'5 either.
6'2". I watched both seasons recently. And what's interesting is in the second season, he's even more shredded and huge than the first season. There were 18 months between the first two seasons. And I think every 18 months, he's going to have to get bigger and more shredded into his 70s to do the full Reacher like canon.
Is 6'5 when people start to be seen as giants?
I think so. I think that's the cutoff. I think that's where it switches.
It's like 6'4 to 6'5 is a big jump.
How tall is LeBron?
6'6 or something? 6'8?
Yeah.
I've played, you know, like pickup with a couple of NBA dudes or borderline NBA dudes. And when you're, there was one time I was walking to like a dinner with one 6'10 guy and one 6'8 guy.
Yeah.
And I'm used to, like you're saying, I'm sort of used to being tallish. It was an experience that I remember very distinctly because I was the short king.
It's all relative.
Oh, yeah.
And then those guys hang out with Yao Ming or the... and
Wembanyama. Wembanyama's the... he's the new tall king. If you're looking up, you're going to see somebody.
That's right. And anyway, Only God Was Above Us, about to come out.
Out Friday, April 5th.
Should we talk about our guest this week?
Ariel, get on out here. We got... world famous producer Ariel Rechtscheid. All right, come on out.
Man, I think it's hilarious how people try to give themselves an extra inch.
Most people are a few to more than a few inches below what they say.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just sad that people got so much in people's heads that they feel like the need to not keep it real.
Dave One's claiming 6'5"?
Yeah.
I think he's so skinny that it doesn't...
yeah,
it doesn't seem,
exactly.
But he's, if you stand,
just gets into the carrying
back to back,
yourself.
He's a couple inches taller. Yeah. Easy. Yeah.
Anyway, so what's going on?
Oh, nothing.
Are you proud of all your hard work on Only God Was Above Us?
Yes, I am.
Well, thanks for all your hard work.
I feel privileged and honored to work with the three of you.
Likewise, absolutely.
You re-recorded the drums for Gen X Cops dozens of times.
Talking about the record and playing it for friends and stuff, so many people have been blown away by the production. And I'm just curious if on the full record, there's one song where the production you feel like especially proud of.
It was kind of like blackout, you know, just kind of follow your instincts, try and make sure each song meets its potential or as close as possible. And there hasn't really been enough time to reflect.
Yeah, right.
You know? Let's run
a recording
down the list.
Ice Cream Piano, Classical, Capricorn, Connect, Prep School Gangsters, The Surfer, Gen X Cops, Mary Boone, Pravda, Hope.
Okay. Well, you know, I have a hard time even taking my opinion of what a song is trying to emote too seriously.
Songs do have their own thing to say. Once it's out, it's been written, there's a demo or something. At that point, it's its own thing. If it's a song that I started writing or even a song that I more or less wrote by myself, even then, I don't necessarily have unique insight. At that point, the song is its own thing. And it can be really difficult to sometimes say if a song doesn't quite work or feels like it could be better, why is that? And that is like the real like detective work aspect of production. And you're really good at getting into the weeds.
The idea really is to get out of the way. You know, it's so easy to fuck up something, whereas to make something complex and keep in mind the fans and the venues and the live performance and trying to make a song that's going to stand up, it does require a lot of trial and error, reacting, and
our music, just like fundamentally, it takes sometimes seemingly so much extra work to get right. And I think it's partially because we work in this slightly strange genre, rock. Whether you think it's dead, alive, back, gone, whatever, it's certainly a kind of unique place to be working in, trying to like pay tribute to what we love but still keep it fresh. Some types of music, they're just fresh. They're just automatically fresh. And it's no diss to those types of music. There's certain types of music at certain moments in history that don't take a lot of time to make.
I would also say that a lot of the music that we make collectively doesn't take a lot of time to get to 98%.
Is it right? It's just the 2% takes.
It's the 2%,
forever.
And why is that? I don't know. Maybe we're just having so much fun making it, we don't want to move on to the next step. Maybe I'm speaking for myself.
There's once or twice I'm accused you of like, do you just not want to be done with this? That's when you remember too, like, people will hear a song. People even hear a song from their favorite band and be like, listen to 10 seconds and be like, sucks. And again, you know, there's times in my life where I used to be like, well, it's not fair. People need to like give stuff. And I don't feel that way anymore.
I don't either.
That's the way the world works.
I'm kidding.
Do your absolute best so that you feel like you left it all out in the field and then see how the world reacts.
And just give it enough time and perspective and you might have a better take on what you're trying to make. You know, this is the first time in my life that I've worked on a fifth album by someone.
I can't always fully explain it, but I just feel like different number albums have a different flavor. And even with dramatically different artists, they roughly can represent something. And of course, first album, you can name so many classic first albums. Our first album is so first album-y. It's just got that one in that indivisible number one up in there. Contra is a classic second album. Modern Vampire is a classic third album. Father of the Bride is a classic fourth album. And this one has just five written all over it. And I don't even know if I want to give away all my album numerology secrets. That'd be like giving people the Bible code. But what does roughly a fifth album mean? Without going all the way into the Bible code, into the Da Vinci code, first album or two, you introduce yourself. Somewhere in the middle, maybe you added a new element. Maybe you pushed off against something. Maybe you explored new territory. Regardless, by the time you get to your fifth album, you've already made a statement or two or three, and you've probably already made a counter statement or something. It gets to be a very legitimate question, which is like, why are we still doing this? What do we have to say? Do we have something to say lyrically, production-wise? Because of the best albums, all these things speak together. The playing, the production, the sound, the words, it all goes together.
Production's the last one on the list, honestly. Like, you can imagine people just trying to, like, do something different production-wise, and it's really not the thing.
I mean, you see those classic things, like somebody older trying to keep up with trends or something. Let's say Bob Dylan loves Doja Cat. Like, that legitimately seems like one of his grandkids plays him Doja Cat. I could totally see him being like, oh, this is pretty interesting. Like Bob listening to Paint the Town Red.
Yeah.
He loves popular music. He wrote a book about it. I could picture Bob Dylan listening to Paint the Town Red and actually being fascinated, inspired. Oh, I could totally see it. Now, because he's Bob Dylan, though, he's going to have to, you know, get out his pen and pad and his acoustic guitar and translate that into 80-year-old Bob Dylan world.
Right.
The one thing he should definitely not do is start downloading Doja Cat trap beats on YouTube. Like, who knows what kind of modern music he listened to as he made his last album or something. But again, it's the translation. And that takes time as you get older. When you're younger, there's a little bit more of an immediacy of like, this is what I like, and I'm going to turn it into what I'm doing.
Yeah, naivete.
Well, it's funny, you know, I've done a bunch of interviews over the past few weeks, but I've definitely talked to some people be like, you've really come a long way since the early days. I'm like, all right, yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I look at it as just like, if you're like making a painting and you're allowed to like paint one small part of the canvas with one color and then you got another chance and little, it's like you're just filling something out, but you're just trying to show your understanding of reality. And, you know, with enough time, there's so many levels to reality, right? There's the reality that you experience when you're young, when you're old. There's the reality that you experience in like the surface of like what you see with your eyes and whatever. There's the reality that when you go inward. The people that I really like over the course of their career, they have songs about being young. Maybe they have songs about first love, whatever. But they also sometimes have songs about the country they live in. Or they sometimes have songs that are about kind of like a whole other plane of existence or something. And all those layers are like equally important. They all add up to the totality of reality. In a career and from album to album, you always have a chance to like, maybe if you're lucky, find like a different layer of the onion. Like a slightly different slice.
Now there is five slices of it.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, with one, it's like, this could be anything. There's something about the fifth album is like, there's enough now to sort to see what that world is.
Of course, there's different vibes within the first album, but, you know, we were kind of seen at least as having like one mode. People really don't want you to repeat yourself, but they also don't want you to be too different. I want us to always find a new place we can go. This album, to me, is so loaded with sounds and ideas that have never been on a Vampire Weekend record. I mean, to me, the highest compliment you can get sometimes when people say, this sounds like one of those songs like you already know, but I don't actually know it.
Yeah,
because that usually just means like the melody is pretty good.
Or there's something about like that thing about not wanting you to change too much, like kind of meaning like be yourself. If you came out the gates with something that was kind of honest and raw and pure, which is kind of like best case scenario for a debut, mm-hmm. you know, and you maintain that thing the whole time, well, then you're not really changing that much, but you are. You're keeping it fresh within the context of you.
People want you to be yourself, and they do want to be a little bit surprised.
Maybe because not enough people have talked about it, I like Connect.
The reason not enough people have talked about it is because
no one's
heard it. But
well, some people have heard it.
But the production is incredible on that song.
Now, is it strange I can't connect? It isn't strange, but I could check. Walked around to where we kept the box of wax.
It doesn't sound that different than it did 2 weeks after we started it. All the like kind of big ideas. Are
there. No, but I'll tell you, I think that's a cool choice. Sometimes I've brought you something you could call a finished song. Often I've brought you a selection of half-baked ideas that kind of go together and it becomes a song. And with the song Connect, I thought there was something cool about that piano riff. And I was getting kind of excited about some of the lyrics and melodies. I think actually that song started with, I don't want to say in a dream, that sounds too mystical, but I think in that kind of like, you know, you open your eyes and you're like, what time is it? And you're like, 4:45. Oh, hell no. And then the next 3 hours, you're like in some like half-baked stage. You know, like when you wake up from that and someone have a night like that and someone says, how'd you sleep last night? And you're like, I'm not going to say I slept terribly because it's not like I went downstairs and watched Impractical Jokers, but I know I looked at my phone, it was 4:45. And then I don't know what happened the next few hours.
I was writing Connect.
At some point in that kind of window, the line, is it strange? I can't connect. It isn't strange, but I could check, came to mind. So I knew there was something cool about that line, and I knew there was something fun about the piano, but then I really remember wondering if it was, like, too fun. You
too
know,
fun?
Yeah, like, just like... My fear is that there was going to be... It was going to sound like circus music. And if it... And it, maybe,
it does.
And maybe it does.
It does.
What Ariel taught me is that it's okay to make circus music.
That's beautiful. Right.
But... I remember feeling, so I had some kind of confidence in aspects of it. Wrote it, I remember during the pandemic, it was like playing piano more. Sometimes when it sounds good when you're kind of messing around on the piano, and then when you actually go to sing it, I don't know, the bottom drops out. And I remember when we first started working on it, I really had this feeling like, I don't know, you know, sometimes you show something to somebody and you're like, I thought this was good, but actually, I don't know, maybe it sucks, whatever. And we were working on it. And I remember when the first time you had me start to lay down some vocals for the chorus, I was immediately thrown off by really hearing my voice back properly singing it. Because, you know, when you're messing around on the piano, you're like humming to yourself. It's in your head. And I remember being like, oh, God, this is not going to work. But I remember you like really were like, hold on. No, there's something here. And you worked at it. And even if it's circus music, you made it very vibey circus music. The production is what makes it compelling through all 5 minutes. That's such an important song on this album too, because it's a different mood.
Do songs come in, are you playing them probably piano or guitar and singing, or is it a demo that you've made?
I might have made some little demo just so I wouldn't forget the chords, but by the time I get there, I'm basically just showing him. I have this idea, there's this part and then there's that part. And I'm pretty sure that the piano that's on the record is from the first time I played it at your house.
Like a lot of it is. There was just kind of like tinkering around on the piano, but it's amazing when it's all said and done. Yeah, I do feel good about it.
Great.
Sue me.
Well, it's getting kind of late.
It is getting late.
Are you looking forward to the next season of And Just Like That?
Yeah. Of Great. Course, you know that I am.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of my guilty pleasures, they were in a bubble. Sex and the City was one of them.
Not anymore.
Come to find out, everybody loves that shit.
Well, thank you.
Dude, thank you.
Thanks for stopping by the campfire.
I appreciate you having me.
All right, we'll see you in Austin. All right, Bill. It's a late night at the clubhouse, but we've been promising we dip into the mailbag, so let's dip into some of those.
If you want to email us, it's vampirecampfirepod@gmail.com, or you can send us a letter, and CT, right where his fingers are, there's going to be an address to send it. I loved this question that we got on a postcard, a very beautiful postcard from St. Louis. It says, "Hi, fellas. Currently listening to Bambina X2, and I must say, bravo, Vampiri. Anyway, have you guys been up to the Great Gateway Arch in historic St. Louis? Did you know it is as wide as it is tall?" Kind of relates to an earlier question that we had for each other. "I'd be delighted to be your guide next time you're in town. Also, in your worldly travels, what have been your favorite monuments? Cheers." Oh, man. Can you guys make out that name?
Oh, because right at the bottom?
Yes, and there's all the stuff there.
Is it
Jane?
I think it's Jack.
Jack STL?
Jack from the STL.
Jack from the STL. Okay, so.
All right, thanks, Jack.
Favorite monument.
The first thing that comes to mind to me, and this, we haven't been there in a while, but it still holds, has got to be the Dom in Cologne.
Oh, the cathedral?
The massive cathedral.
Mm.
There's something that's so striking, that, and you can see it. Like, we stayed in a hotel across the river, and it's kind of the main feature of the skyline from where we stayed. I think we took like a long-ass walk one time. The three of us took like a two-hour walk and got curry-verse.
Yeah, we walked to the show.
Yeah.
But I remember being in Madrid last time when we played Mad Cool Festival in 2019 and just really loving all the brutalist architecture. And there was the building, the Torres Blancas, that I thought was really, really sick.
I love monuments. I honestly just hard to choose. I believe there's some really big monuments made. Where was that? I think it was somewhere in kind of like the eastern part of the United States. I mean, this could have been 100 years ago.
I got one that connects.
Yeah.
That connects to Agua out on Friday.
What's that?
Grant's Tomb.
I know who's buried in Grant's Tomb. I've actually always ridden for the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument. I've always thought, classics. You know what, like, we should be proud of our country that those are actually very strong monuments.
So there you go, Jack from the STL. Vampire Weekend's
great,
favorite
great
monuments.
Question. Thank you so much.
And by the way, we all like the St. Louis Arch too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Actually, I'd love to go see a bit more of St. Louis. I can picture the green room at the pageant, and I can picture the art museum. That's about it. I feel like I never got to know St. Louis too well.
We got a bunch of great questions. I'll just read two that I really like. First, this is from Joey. "Hey, really love that one of the NYC shows are a matinee. Do you feel more artists should be offering matinee shows? Are you guys more matinee showgoers, or is evening still the go-to? Thanks."
No, I don't think more artists should do matinee shows, because I don't think they could handle it.
This is our thing.
We've carved out a
and
nice,
we've been doing it before it was a part of the popular conversation. The matinee show used to be more typical, right?
I think, yeah, because it's right now it's mainly known for Broadway or theater performances.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there were music matinees. I don't really have, this is more of an impressionistic answer, but I feel like it was true. Certainly early in late shows.
Well, one thing's for sure. You watch old footage of the Dead sometimes and you're like, the light looks like it's 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah, yeah. Certain types of music especially obviously feel right after dark. We always had a phrase in the band, behind the dark curtain, because
it's all we wanted.
We wanted to get behind the dark curtain. When you're 23 at the
that's
peak,
all you care about.
Peak indie, all
that's
you want to do is get behind the dark curtain.
Getting behind the dark
curtain.
Which
all that means is that we would get thrown on festival bills very early.
Mm-hmm.
So then meanwhile you see all like the big bands.
They get to use their lights.
They get to use their lights and, you know, it cools off and they get to play behind the dark curtain. We said, man, that'd be cool. One day we'll get to play behind the dark curtain. But in the meantime, like first time we played Coachella, what time was that? Three?
Like two?
Something.
It was very bright.
Remember the first time we played a Summer Sonic Festival in Tokyo? I think they had us first of like 12 in a baseball stadium at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
Playing to, you know, a couple thousand people in a space that maybe would hold 90,000.
That Chris Martin and Coldplay were going to crush, not hours later.
Yeah, yeah, Coldplay was headlining. Once we made it behind the dark curtain, we looked back and we realized, you know what?
It wasn't so bad.
It wasn't so bad. And actually our music made sense there. So, you know, the first time we did it was Ojai 2018. We did Saturday night, Sunday morning, and it felt great. That Sunday morning show was like,
absolutely.
It was beautiful weather. It was like a tiny bit cold and a tiny bit like misty. And also, don't you just think from like a time management point of view, isn't it nice to have something exciting like a concert to go to midday?
Absolutely.
And then it's like, so it's all wrapped up by like 2 p.m. The world's your oyster.
You know, I've been going to bed usually between 10:30. These days, getting up between 6 and 7. The idea of being on stage till 11 multiple nights a week does horrify me right now at the tender age of 39. I mean, it'll be fine when we get to it.
We have to get on a whole new schedule.
If we do a full matinee tour one day, that would be my dream.
I've got two young kids. So the idea of what does a weekend mean? Were I a parent not in Vampire Weekend?
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a no-brainer.
Yeah, great kind of vibe for those shows. And then I picked this one for slightly selfish reasons, but it's from Joel. Hello, guys. Longtime day one VW fan. I'm loving the single so far. I feel like that every song we've heard so far has captured every era of VW from the debut album all the way to FOTB and everything in between and morphed it to this new fresh sound, pulling from the old eras and influences and modernizing it and making it something new. Is that intentional at all in any way, or does it just happen when you've been in a band with the same set of guys for about 15 years? Love the pods, keep them coming. Bonus question, what are the chances we get a VW song for Harrison Bader's walk-up song? Thanks. My first cousin is Harrison Bader, who has been a Major League Baseball player now for 6 years. And this year, what's really fun is that he's going to be playing center field for the New York Mets.
Let's go, Mets.
CT has been a lifelong Met fan. And for the first time in our lives together, we've been friends for 18 years. We've never rooted for the same baseball team.
I think the tour, people are going to see this on tour.
We've been
a locker. He was a Cardinal.
Then I was a Yankee fan. Yeah, exactly.
Now we're going to be able to check the
scores. Now we're riding together. We're riding together all year, and it's something that I'm very excited about. And, you know, Harrison recently did an interview where he's asked his favorite Vampire Weekend song. And, you know, Harrison was in the video for Oxford Comma, but you just get...
As a young lad.
You get nervous. You know, Harrison listens to all kinds of music. Maybe he's not always, you know, checking out what we've been up to, but he talked a lot about his love of giving up the gun in the interview.
What's your favorite Harrison Bader season?
I mean, my favorite one to watch had to have been the COVID season in 2020. It was very surreal to see a bunch of baseball players playing in empty stadiums, but he had a very good season.
On the Cardinals?
Yeah, on the Cardinals. Yeah. Beyond that, when he was the 2022 playoffs for the Yankees, when he was...
Oh my God, he was playing out of his mind.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be...
That was a real phenomenon.
He's going to bring that energy to Queens.
But yeah, I'm very, very excited for seeing Harrison play this season and watching games with my guy CT. Great third episode. Shall we do it again, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Bear, you got the fire?
I got the fire.
You got the fire? All right.